good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, the war in Ukraine is still going on. It's been estimated that the Russians have lost 15,000 soldiers from what we had always been told was the most powerful army in the world. They've had convoys destroyed. They've not had an easy row. And as my father always said, it's hard to beat a man on his own ground when he thinks he's right. Well, today's March 24th, 83rd day of the year. 282 days remain till the year's over with. It's also the 365th and last day of the year in many European implementations of the Julian calendar. Excuse me. In 1199, King Richard I of England is wounded by a crossbow bolt while fighting in France. He died April 6th, 1387. English victory over a Franco-Castilian-Flemish fleet in the Battle of Margate. That's off the coast of Margate. 1401, Turco-Mongol Emperor Timur sacks Damascus. And something that shocked everybody. 1603, James VI of Scotland is proclaimed James I of England and Ireland when Elizabeth I died. 1603, the Tokugawa Shogunate in Edo, Japan. 1663, the province of Carolina is granted by charter to 8 lords proprietor in reward for their assistance in restoring Charles II of England to the throne. 1720, Count Frederick of Hesse-Cassel is elected King of Sweden by the Reichstag of the Estates after his consort, Eureka Eleonora, abdicated the throne on February 29th. 1721, Johann Sebastian Bach dedicated 6 concertos to Margrave Christian Ludwig of Brandenburg, Swift, now commonly called the Brandenburg Concertos. 1765, Great Britain passes the Quartering Act, which requires the 13 colonies to house British troops whether they wanted to or not. 1794, in Krakow, Tadeusz Kościuszko announces a general uprising against Imperial Russia and the Kingdom of Prussia and assumes the powers of the commander-in-chief of all the Polish forces. 1829, the Parliament of the UK passes the Roman Catholic Relief Act of 1829. It allows Catholics to serve in Parliament. 1832. In Hiram, Ohio, a group of men beat and tar and feather Mormon leader Joseph Smith. He was the original Mormon leader. 1854. President Jose Gregorio Monagas abolishes slavery in Venezuela. 1860. Saki Uradamon incident. Japanese Chief Minister Lee Nosuke is assassinated by Ronin Samurai outside the Saki Urada gate of Edo Castle. 1869, the last of Tito Kawaro's forces surrendered to the New Zealand government, ending his uprising. 1878, the British frigate HMS Eurydice sinks, killing more than 300. 1882, Robert Koch announces the discovery of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, the bacteria that are responsible for tuberculosis. 1900, Mayor of New York City, Robert Anderson Van Wyck, breaks ground for a new underground rapid transit railroad that would link Manhattan and Brooklyn. 1900, Carnegie Steel Company is formed in New Jersey, capitalized with $160 million, the largest of any company to date, to that date. 1921, the 1921 Women's Olympiad began in Monte Carlo, becoming the first international women's sports event. 1927, Nanking incident, foreign warships bombard Nanking in China in defense of the foreign citizens that are inside the city. 1934, the Tidings-McDuffie Act is passed by the U.S. Congress, allowing the Philippines to become a self-governing commonwealth. 1944, German troops massacre 335 Italian civilians in Rome. Also in 44, World War II. An event later dramatized in the movie The Great Escape, 76 Allied prisoners of war began breaking out of the German camp Stalag Luft 3. 1946, a British cabinet mission arrives in India to discuss and plan for the transfer of power from the British Raj to Indian leadership. 1961, the Quebec Board of the French Language is established. 1976, in Argentina, the armed forces overthrow the constitutional government of President Isabel Perón and start a 7-year dictatorial period, self-styled the National Reorganization Process. 1977, Morarji Desai becomes the Prime Minister of India, first Prime Minister not to belong to the Indian National Congress. 1980, El Salvadorian Archbishop Oscar Romero is assassinated while celebrating Mass in San Salvador. 1986, the Lascaux gas explosion leads to new UK laws on landfill gas migration and gas protection on landfill sites. 1989, in Prince William Sound in Alaska, the Exxon Valdez spills 240,000 barrels of crude oil after running aground. 1993, Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 is discovered by Carolyn and Eugene Shoemaker and David Levy at the Palomar Observatory in California. 1998, Mitchell Johnson and Andrew Golden, ages 11 and 13 respectively, fire upon teachers and students at Westside Middle School in Jonesboro, Arkansas. 5 people are killed and 10 are wounded. That's what happens when you don't stop the bullying. 1998, the tornado sweeps through Danton in India, killing 250 and injuring 3,000 more. 1998, Dr. Rudiger Marmulia performs the first computer-assisted bone segment navigation at the University of Regensburg in Germany. 1999, Kosovo War. NATO begins attacks on Yugoslavia without U.S. Security Council approval, marking the first time NATO's attacked a sovereign country. And now they're too afraid of their own shadow to do anything about what's going on in Ukraine. 1999, a lorry carrying margarine and flour catches fire inside the Mont Blanc tunnel, creating an inferno that kills 38 people. 2003, Arab League votes 21-1 in favor of a resolution demanding an end to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. And if you think that had any impact on anything, you're sadly mistaken. 2008, Bhutan officially becomes a democracy with its first ever general election. 2015, German Wings Flight 9525 crashes in the French Alps in an apparent pilot mass murder-suicide. All 150 people on board are killed. 2018, Syrian Civil War. Turkish Armed Forces and the Syrian National Army take full control of Afrin District, marking the end of the Afrin Offensive. 2018, students across the U.S. staged the March for Our Lives, demanding gun control in response to the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting, which, of course, accomplished so much. 2019, Jakarta MRT, a rapid transit system in Jakarta, began operation. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day. Catherine of Vadstena, Hildelith of Barking, Mac Carithan of Clogger, Oscar Romero in the Catholic Church, Anglican Communion and Lutheranism, Paul Couturier in the Church of England, Walter Hilton in the Church of England, Day of Remembrance for Truth and Justice in Argentina, International Day for the Right to the Truth Concerning Gross Human Rights Violations and for the Dignity of Victims. Whoever came up with that one had too much free time on their hands. National Tree Planting Day in Uganda. Student Day in Scientology. World Tuberculosis Day internationally. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Let's see what else we might have. Now I know there we go. 1739 was the end of the Childeracy War victory. 1401, Timur attacks the city of Damascus, second city of the Mamluk Empire. Through a scholar and negotiator, Ibn Khaldun's, though a sculptor and negotiator, Ibn Khaldun's life is spared. The city is sacked and the Umayyad Mosque is destroyed. 1545, German Parliament opens in Worms. 1550, France and England signed the Peace of Boulogne. 1629, the first game laws passed in the American colonies by Virginia. 1664, theologian and colonist Roger Williams is granted a charter to colonize Rhode Island. 1731, Jerome, also known as Hieronymus de Salis, naturalized as British by an act of Parliament. 1792, Benjamin West, who was from the U.S., becomes president of the Royal Academy of London. 1801, Alexander Pavlovich Romanov becomes Tsar Alexander I of Russia. 1815, the Handel and Haydn Society of Boston is founded. 1828, the Philadelphia and Columbia Railway, the first state-owned railway, is authorized. 1837, Canada gives its black citizens the right to vote. 1848, a state of siege is proclaimed in Amsterdam. 1853, an anti-slavery newspaper, The Provincial Freedom, was first published in Windsor, Ontario, edited by Samuel Ringgold Ward and Mary Ann Shad Carey, the first black woman publisher in North America. She was also a major suffragist. 1855, Manhattan, Kansas, founded as New Boston, Kansas. 1860, the Clipper, Andrew Jackson, arrives in San Francisco, 89 days out of New York. I'm going to state 1868, Metropolitan Life Insurance Company is formed. 1877, University boat race between Oxford and Cambridge ends in a dead heat. 1880, the Tobacco Growers Mutual Insurance Company incorporates in Connecticut. 1882, German scientist Robert Koch, who's the one that discovered and described the tubercular bacillus, which causes tuberculosis, also established germ theory. 1883, saw the first telephone call between New York and Chicago. 1887, Oscar Strauss appointed the first Jewish ambassador from the U.S. to Turkey. 1894, 37 miners killed at Franklin, Washington. 1905, a group of Cretans dedicated to Crete's union with Greece, led by Eutherios Venizelos, meet at the village of Thariso and proclaims a union in defiance of the great powers. 1906, the census of the British Empire showed that Great Britain ruled one-fifth of the world. 1907, the first issue of the Georgian Bolshevik newspaper, Dro, is published. 1910, 83 degrees Fahrenheit, the highest temperature ever recorded in Cleveland in March. 1913, the Palace Theater opens at 1564 Broadway in New York City. 1916, the German submarines torpedoed the unarmed French cross-channel packet, the Sussex. 1920, the first U.S. Coast Guard air station is established in Morehead City, North Carolina. 1924, on this date, Greece becomes a republic. 1926, the Beehive in The Hague opens the first escalator in the Netherlands. 1927, Cuban chess champion Jose Raul Capablanca wins a 33-day grand chess tournament. 1927, the Dutch First Chamber condemns Belgium and the Netherlands' Wielingen Treaty. 1930, the first religious service was telecast in the U.S., the B2XBS in New York City. 1932, the first U.S. radio broadcast from a moving train, Bell Baker WABC from Maryland. 1933, the Peter I Island incorporated as Norwegian dependency. 1935, Major Bowes' original amateur hour goes national on NBC Radio Network. 1937, a bus carrying a roller skater troupe to Cincinnati from St. Louis crashes into a bridge abutment in Salem, Illinois. 21 people are killed. 1937, National Gallery of Arts established by Congress. 1941, British troops defeat the Italians in Somaliland. 1941, German troops occupy El Gahila, Libya. 1942, on this date, the U.S. government began moving native-born citizens with Japanese ancestry into detention camps under Executive Order 9066 with the intention of preventing homegrown espionage. On this day in 1944, the Great Escape took place. 76 Allied officers escaped Stalag Luft III. 1944, 811 British bombers attacked Berlin. 1944, in occupied Rome, Nazis execute 335 civilians. Retaliation for the previous day via Rosella bombing that killed 33 Germans. They said they would kill 10 to 1. 1944, RAF rear gunner Nicholas Alcamati survives a jump from his Lancaster bomber 18,000 feet over Germany without a parachute. His fall was broken by pine trees and soft snow. He suffered only a sprained leg. Even if he flapped his arms on the way down. 1945, Operation Varsity. In the largest one-day airborne operation of all time, British, U.S., and Canadian paratroopers land east of the Rhine in northern Germany. 1945, U.S. minesweepers reach... Unbelievable. Karama Rito, the south coast of Okinawa. 1947, Congress proposes a two-term limitation on the presidency. Would that we did the same thing to members of Congress. 1947, John D. Rockefeller Jr. donates the New York City East River site to the UN. 1949, SS police chief in the Netherlands, Hans Albin Rotter's request for a pardon is denied. He's executed by a firing squad. 1952, there was a great demonstration against apartheid in South Africa. 1955, the first seagoing oil drill rig is placed into service. 1955, the British Army patrols are withdrawn from Belfast after 20 years. On this day in 1958, under serial number 533-10761, Elvis Presley joined the U.S. Army and had to get his hair cut. 1959, Iraq withdraws from the Baghdad Pact. 1959, the Party of the African Federation is launched by Leopold Sédar Senghor and Modibo Keita. 1960, in a great move for readers' freedom, U.S. Appeals Court rules the novel Lady Chatterley's Lover is not obscene. 1961, a New York Senate approves $55 million for a baseball stadium at Flushing Meadows. '62, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards perform as Little Boy Blue and the Blue Boys. 1964, on this date, the Kennedy half dollar is issued. 1966, the Selective Service announces college deferments would be based on performance. You flunk, you go. 1972, Great Britain imposes direct rule over Northern Ireland. 1976, Argentine President Isabel Martinez de Perón deposed in a military coup headed by Jorge Rafael Videla, who became dictator and president of Argentina. 1977, Lily Tomlin's the first woman to appear solo on a Broadway show and appearing nightly got a special Tony Award. 1979, ballroom closes at the Majestic Theater in New York City after 116 performances. 1979, Columbia, flown on an aircraft carrier, lands at Kennedy Space Center. 1980, ABC's nightly Iran hostage crisis program is renamed Nightline. 1981, Nightline with Ted Koppel premieres on ABC. 1981, Colombia drops diplomatic relations with Cuba. 1982, the U.S. submarine Jacksonville collides with a Turkish freighter near Virginia. 1986, U.S. and Libya clash in the Gulf of Sidra. 1989, ABC rebroadcast Murray Martin and Cyril Richards' 1960 version of Peter Pan for the first time since 1973. Murray Martin was actually Larry Hagman's mother. 1989. I think that's done it for our little history segment. You know, we were talking about the time travel in our last few shows. And today, we're going to talk about some conspiracy theories. Now, granted, a theory is not something that's proven, but it's a belief based on the evidence. And a lot of people firmly believe in some of the theories we're going to talk about. For example, according to conspiracy theorists, AIDS did not originate in Africa, but in secret government laboratories that developed this and other biological weapons. Now, the first African woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize, Kenyan environmentalist Wangari Maathai, utilized the world spotlight to assert that the AIDS virus was an intentionally designed biological weapon used in warfare. She rejected the hypothesis that AIDS, which is also called the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, originated in monkeys, pointing out that Africans had lived near monkeys from time immemorial without any disease like this showing up. But she did note there's no denying the truth that over 25 million and 38 million people who have AIDS worldwide are Africans, and the vast majority, she said, were women. Now, the U.S. State Department welcomed Mattel and her Nobel Peace Prize triumph, but disagreed with her statements that human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, that causes AIDS, was created as a bioweapon in a Western laboratory with the goal of mass extinction of any particular target race. And while such a statement might be expected from the State Department, conspiracy theorists are quick to point out that one of the primary goals of the New World Order and its agents, working in the shadows behind every government in the world, is to reduce the number of people, which would substantially decrease the world's population and increase the power of those people who are in power. Now, Dr. Robert Gallo of the National Cancer Institute and Luc Montagnier of the Pasteur Institute in Paris claimed to have discovered the AIDS virus in 1984. In 1987, there was a lawsuit to resolve the dispute over which one discovered it first. But the virus's discoverers have never agreed on the virus origins or the genesis of AIDS. Montagnier thought that the virus's origins were unknown and critical to differentiate between the virus's beginnings and the AIDS pandemic. Gallo, who was the better known and the more influential of the two experts, claimed that the virus descended from a common viral parent seen in animals and was transmitted to humans via the monkey. He said in 1983, a year before he found the virus, and Giudice Fettner, a freelance writer who lived in Africa, informed him that green monkeys in Central Africa caused AIDS. In fact, she wrote a book called The Truth About AIDS. But in that book, she never mentions green monkeys and stresses her belief AIDS started in America. Now, despite the lack of scientific studies to back up Gallo's green monkey thesis, the explanation remained popular among the media and the general public until the late 90s, when another group of American scientists claimed to have uncovered the virus's origin in a particular kind of chimp. Now, many conspiracy theorists have never accepted the out-of-Africa green monkey or chimp or goat theory for the origins of AIDS. The first homosexual males were diagnosed with AIDS in 1979. Now, during the first year of the pandemic, the victims were all young, mostly white, previously healthy, highly educated, and promiscuous. And they all resided in Manhattan. Now, by 1980, the illness had spread to homosexual males in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Denver, St. Louis, and Chicago. In 1981, if an official AIDS pandemic was announced. Before that period, AIDS was unknown in Africa, and the pandemic didn't begin there until late 1982. And Gallo became world famous for discovering the green monkeys in Africa harbored the sickness for generations before the pandemic began officially in 1982. But at this point, a perplexing issue arose. The first cases of AIDS were reported to the CDC in 1979. Were we to believe that all of the homosexual males in Manhattan who caught the disease had just been to Africa and been bitten by green monkeys? Or was there some kind of link between government-sponsored hepatitis B studies that started with homosexual males in Manhattan in 1978, the year before the first appearance of AIDS? Now, the HIV pandemic erupted in 1979. In 1980, the government funded comparable hepatitis B studies in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Denver, St. Louis, and Chicago. And the experimental vaccination put into all these homosexual guys was said to have been created using chimps. Now, early in the 1970s, stories began to circulate about covert government biowarfare research and scientists undertaking species-jumping operations, including mixing viruses and planting them into animal and human cell cultures. And President Richard Nixon merged the U.S. Army's biowarfare division at Fort Detrick, Maryland, with the National Cancer Institute in 1971. And although that initiative was promoted to the public as part of the president's war on cancer, similar to Reagan's war on drugs. It also linked the Army's DNA and the genetic engineering operations with anti-cancer research and molecular biology studies. Furthermore, cancer research programs undertaken by commercial firms were integrated into anti-cancer research efforts performed by the CIA. There's a player for you. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the World Health Organization. Now, as this research advanced, hundreds of novel laboratory hybrids, recombinant and mutant viruses were developed. Now, a few socially conscious scientists started to warn others that some newly developed viruses may be exceedingly harmful if they somehow got released from the library or the laboratory. And finally, due to the efforts of a few whistleblowers, news spread that government scientists had created a synthetic biological agent that didn't exist naturally and against which no natural immunity could be established. Now, knowledge of what had been done in the lab spread quickly to other government researchers all across the globe. The Danish doctor Johannes Clemensen warned in 1973 that the transmissibility of such genetically engineered viral agents may unleash a global cancer outbreak if they ever got out of the laboratory. Then in 1979, his foreboding forecast came true with the onset of AIDS among Manhattan's homosexual community. And although most people accept Robert Gallo's explanation that the AIDS pandemic is a consequence of a monkey virus crossing species, conspiracy theories have produced their own theories about AIDS and HIV. And I'm going to talk about some of the more persistent theories. Now, there's something called The River, A Journey to the Source of HIV/AIDS by Edward Hooper. And it pushes the notion that HIV arose from SIV, simian immunodeficiency virus, present in chimps. Now, he describes a scenario in which the villain is Dr. Hilary Kaprowski, virologist working for Wistar in Philadelphia. In the early 1950s, the Research Institute utilized a hurriedly brewed chimp kidney culture to create a million doses of an oral vaccine for a huge experimental polio immunization campaign in the Belgian Congo. Pharmaceutical firm placing pressure on Kaprowski to beat Dr. Salk and Dr. Sabin to the market with the first commercially accessible polio vaccine fueled the hurry and speed in executing this mass immunization project. In the 1970s, the World Health Organization, controlled by the New World Order, so they say, purposefully administered tainted vaccinations to individuals in third world nations, which caused the AIDS pandemic. Now, Africa was originally targeted in a smallpox eradication operation so that a connection could later be drawn that AIDS began in Africa. In 1977, U.S. military scientists at Fort Detrick bioengineered HIV by fusing the Vicina and the HTLV virus. It was tested on convicts who willingly agreed to be injected with the virus and returned from early release from incarceration. The virus spread from these freed criminals to a larger population, particularly in the LGBT community. Soviet KGB produced the viruses and circulated misinformation suggesting the CIA was behind the disease's spread. Now, AIDS was developed as a result of a biowarfare research done by the U.S. government with the explicit goal of removing surplus populations among blacks, homosexuals, and other social groups that weren't part of the mainstream, so to speak. Dr. Alan Cantwell, who wrote AIDS and the Doctors of Death, an inquiry into the origins of the AIDS epidemic and queer blood, the secret AIDS genocide plot, believes that HIV is a genetically modified virus that was introduced into the gay and bisexual population by the U.S. government scientists between 1978 and 1981 in Manhattan, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Denver, Chicago. And this was done under the guise of the hepatitis B experiments. Now, Dr. Gary Glum, who wrote Full Disclosure, alleges he was given top secret information that the AIDS virus was produced at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in Cold Spring Harbor, New York. World Health Organization and the Red Cross are participating in the plot to spread AIDS, issued in 1978 as part of the Illuminati's and the New World Order's broader population control scheme. Now, Glum cautions that the virus is significantly more readily transferred than medical records suggest, and it may be transferred via kissing, mosquito bites, and even casual contact. He further claimed the Upjohn Pharmaceuticals possessed various medicinal remedies for AIDS that the government has prohibited being released. Now, the Nation of Islam and a new Black Panther Party led by Louis Farrakhan have accused Jewish physicians of inventing AIDS to exterminate black people across the globe. I find that one a little far-fetched because there's no real evidence supporting some kind of program to eliminate the blacks being carried out by Jewish physicians. Dr. Leonard Horowitz, who wrote Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, Nature, Accident or Intentional, and Death in the Air, Globalism, Terrorism, and Toxic Warfare, theorizes AIDS was engineered by the U.S. government defense contractors such as Litton Bionetics to target Jews, blacks, and Hispanics as the first to be eliminated in a massive population control program. Now, keep in mind, there was a program during World War II that the Nazis were pushing. It was called eugenics. And it actually had its beginnings here in this country and was adopted by Hitler as the model for removing what he called unneeded members of society. Then we have another theory about a rise in suicides among certain inhabitants. It was called the Woodpecker Project. The covert Russian woodpecker, tap, 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 has been blasting extreme low frequencies at U.S. coastal communities, and it's said that it triggers panic, sadness, and suicides among the inhabitants. Now, warnings that Soviet submarines were beaming extremely low-frequency signals at U.S. coastal towns, of course, alarmed conspiracy theorists in 1975 and a number of years after that. Now, extreme low frequencies refers to the radio range of 3 to 300 hertz. Conspiracy theorists claim that the low frequency caused widespread illness, migraines, depression, and even suicides among those coastal populations. Listening equipment picked up the ELF signal, which was characterized as a tap, 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 sounding very much like a woodpecker banging on a tree. There was a secret Russian neuromedical study that showed that each mood, idea, or emotion that people experience has its own set of brain frequencies. So Russian scientists and psychologists produced a comprehensive list of these brain processes with their specific frequencies. The plan was that submarines might shoot ELF waves for wrath or suicide or hysteria, desire, psychosis, or despair at hundreds, if not thousands, of unwitting victims from the seas of the U.S. coast. Soviet submarines were not attempting to eradicate the entire country, but if they could create neurological breakdowns in coastal dwellers, it'd be proof that the human brain can be manipulated, even at a distance, by using ELF conveyed by pulse-modulated microbeams. Now, one of the cities where the Soviet pulsating woodpecker ELF pulses was directed was Eugene, Oregon. It's well known the United States Navy utilizes extreme low frequency to communicate with underwater submarines. And because of the electrical conductivity of salt water, most electromagnetic signals are inhibited from reaching undersea vehicles. And ELF is rarely utilized in everyday communications because its very low transmission rate necessitates installing a very big antenna spanning several kilometers. But according to conspiracy theorists, U.S. military scientists started to understand that the woodpecker was more than just Cold War hysteria. The Navy finally invested $25 million on ELF research. So it wasn't long before America had its own fleet of woodpeckers roaming the coastline of Soviet bloc countries. Senator Gaylord Nelson of the United States later pushed the Navy to release their studies proving ELF broadcasts may change human blood chemistry. Dr. Susan Baywin and Dr. W. Ross Athey demonstrated in 1976 that ELF fields impact nerve cells. The unusual anomalous sky glows, strange lighting, and mysterious plasma phenomena that was seen in the sky surrounding the woodpecker transmitter sites in the USSR in the summer of 1977 shows that it affected more than just human moods. According to the Washington Post in a September 23rd, 1977 article, A strange star-like ball of light was spotted in the sky above Petrozavodsk, Soviet Kurila, spreading like a jellyfish and pouring down shafts of light. Now, the U.S. government built and maintained two locations in Wisconsin's Chequamegon National Forest and Michigan's Escanaba State Forest, each employing power lines as antennas, extending 14 to 28 miles in length. Ecologists grew worried about environmental conditions and human health issues caused by the large quantities of energy produced and released by the extremely low frequency. 1984, federal court ordered development to be paused till more research can be conducted and reviewed. Now, during the massive floods that drenched the Midwest in 1993, many saw strange bursts of light that poured from the tops of storm clouds into the upper sky. According to Kansas City Star, these strange bursts of light resembled jellyfish, similar to the reports coming out of Russia. September 24, 1993, the newspaper stated the light flashes were brightest where they peaked out, typically about 40 miles up, so you have a jellyfish body at the top of the tentacles trailing down. Well, the antennas of the Chequamegon and Escanaba ELF sites were ordered decommissioned in 2004. According to conspiracy theorists, it makes no difference if the government demolishes these two sites. HARP greatly outperforms these Russian and African woodpeckers in terms of weather control and global military dominance. So what they were saying is the advancement of research allowed them to dispense with these very noticeable antenna arrays. Now, another conspiracy that actually had some basis in reality was Aum Shinrikyo, also translated as Supreme Truth. Asahara Shoko helped bring his apocalyptic prophecies to fruition by having his followers unleash sarin nerve gas in Tokyo subway stations. Asahara Shoko, born Chizo Matsumoto, founded Aum Shinrikyo, which was a cult with hundreds of followers, in 1987. He claimed to have attained enlightenment when alone in India's Himalaya Mountains in 1986. All in actuality, he probably just lost it. Given the holy name Asahara Shoko, a new religion named Aum, which is Sanskrit for the forces of destruction and creation, and Shinrikyo, which means teaching of the highest truth. And then he was given a mission to teach the truth about the universe's creation and destruction. Supposedly, his excellent efforts would prevent the apocalypse from occurring. And following considerable opposition from mainstream authorities in Japan, the organization was recognized as a religious body. And if you're recognized as a religious body, you can literally do anything, and it's quite all right. God said so. Now, Asahara Shoko was heavily inspired by the Christian Bible's Book of Revelations, Nostradamus' prophecies, Tibetan Buddhist teachings on transmigration, as well as different Hindu themes and deities. Aum's principal deity is Shiva, the Hindu god of devastation. Initially, Asahara instructed his disciples to endeavor to turn bad energy into good energy to escape what he saw as the devastation of a coming nuclear war. 30,000 students had to experience real spiritual emancipation through his teachings, and that would offset the approach of the nuclear war. But few outside his group realized Asahara had a grand plot to take over Japan and ultimately the globe. Shinto, the Supreme Truth Party, was a new political party founded by Aum, and he ran 25 candidates in the 1990 Japanese legislative election. Now, if all 25 hadn't have been defeated at the election, things might have gone differently. Instead, faced with his plans being derailed, he started to get apocalyptic visions emphasizing the impending end of the planet. One of the terrifying prophecies from the spirit realm predicted the United States would ignite World War III with Japan, ushering in Armageddon. He urged his supporters they needed to move quickly to grab control of Japan with such a disaster looming. And one of the Aum belief system's tenets believed the followers might alleviate negative karma by undergoing different types of hardship. Indeed, it seemed natural non-believers may be helped into erasing their negative karma if Aum could aid them in their suffering, perhaps by killing them. Well, Aum caused a series of strange chemical incidents in Japan in 1994. Sarin nerve gas, which was developed for use by the Germans, killed 7 people and wounded hundreds more in central Japan's Akita Fukashi area. On March 20th, 1995, during morning rush hour in Tokyo, 10 high-ranking Aum adherents boarded 5 subway trains at separate stations and unleashed sarin at a preset time. They killed 12 and wounded thousands more. Tokyo police investigated the cult and discovered that between October 1988 and March 1995, Ashihara might have ordered the death of 33 of his own members who defied his directives and wanted to create the cult. In May of 1995, Japanese authorities arrested Ashihara and 104 of his followers. In October 1995, the Japanese government removed its recognition of the Aum as a religious organization. Still, in 1997, a government panel opted not to apply the country's anti-subversive law against the group, which would have banned the cult. However, due to worries that Aum would commit future terrorist acts, legislation passed in 1999 authorized the government to maintain police monitoring of the organization. In July of 2001, Russian officials apprehended a group of Russian Aum supporters who intended to detonate explosives near Tokyo's Imperial Palace to liberate Ashihara and transfer him to Russia. While Aum changed his name to Aleph, which means to begin again, in January of 2000, under the leadership of Fumihiro Joyu, and claimed to have repudiated the violent and cult-like practices undertaken by Aum. Its founders' apocalyptic doctrines still motivated the group. In early 2005, Japanese authorities raided 4 cult-related locations. Inside one, they discovered a Geiger counter and a largely built concrete bunker 2 levels deep. Many people were Japanese members. We're still moving ahead with preparing for the apocalyptic occurrences. And they wondered whether the locations were intended to take over the complex facilities near Mount Fuji where Aum Shinrikyo formerly produced sarin gas and tortured and cremated wayward members. Well, that one is a real world conspiracy, so to speak. And there's another one that we didn't hear much about, but apparently he did undertake quite a lot of antisocial activities. His name was Louis Beam. He became a lone wolf terrorist against the government, which he saw as betraying the white race. Man born in 1946 became one of the extreme right's most powerful and explosive figures. Beam is often regarded as the first significant practitioner of the lone wolf or leaderless resistance type of activity. Initially started out involved as a Klansman. Then he became a neo-Nazi with Christian identity links. And for more than 30 years, he waged an aggressive campaign against a government he considered corrupt, despotic, and under the direction of a multinational Jewish conspiracy. Now, he grew up in Lake Jackson, Texas, amid the segregated South. Following an 18-month term of service in Vietnam, he came back to Texas in 1968 and joined the Texas chapter of the United Klans of America, led by Texas Grand Dragon Frank Converse. He left the United Klans in 1976 to join David Duke's Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, where he was assigned to train Klansmen in guerrilla warfare. Now, Beam became more concerned about the white supremacist movement's dwindling membership roles and became his personal goal to revitalize the Klan somehow. During 1978 and 79, he recruited Klan members among U.S. Army soldiers at Fort Hood in Texas, and by 1980, Duke, one more time, elevated him to the Grand Dragon of the Texas KKK. Well, Beam sparked major detentions between refugee Vietnamese shrimp workers and local fishers who shared Gulf Coast waters in the Galveston Bay region of Texas in 1981. The war cry was, "White power will fight," and he sent armed Klansmen to defend the Texas fishermen while harassing refugee fishers and the Vietnamese families in the vicinity. In collaboration with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is quite an interesting organization. The Vietnamese Fishermen's Association filed an injunction to stop the Klan's harassment, and a U.S. district judge decided in their favor in May of 1981, ordering Beam and his men to stop participating in illegal acts of violence and intimidation. Well, at that point, Beam stepped down as Texas Grand Dragon to become an ambassador for Richard Butler's Aryan Nations. Now, there's a bunch of likable folks. Residing at the Aryan headquarters in Hayden Lake, Idaho, Beam created a complex computer network to disseminate racist and anti-Semitic propaganda more efficiently. He also devised the infamous assassination point system that assigned points to would-be assassins depending on the value of their targets. When Butler, who became ill, chose to stand down, all signs were that Beam would take over as head of the Aryan Nations. However, on April 24, 1987, Beam and 13 others were indicted by a federal grand jury in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And they were charged with their charges included firebombing a Jewish community center in Bloomington, Indiana, attempting to blow up a natural gas pipeline in Fulton, Arkansas, purchasing firearms and explosives in Missouri and Oklahoma, and stealing over $4 million from banks and armored vehicles. Well, in Washington State, Beam fled to Mexico using the code name Lone Star before the indictment was released. Then he was apprehended and handed over to U.S. authorities on November 6, 1987, after an altercation with the Mexican Federal Judicial Police in Guadalajara that left one officer gravely injured. Then Beam elected to defend himself in court with the help of Kirk Lyons, a lawyer renowned for sympathizing with radical right clients. After 7 weeks of testimony and 20 hours of deliberation, the jury acquitted Beam and his co-defendants on all counts on April 7, 1988, which was a significant defeat to the federal government's efforts to police the extreme right throughout the 80s. Now, Beam hailed the establishment of the Fresh Right, a movement that coupled Christian identity to the formation of a nation-state for the white man, an Aryan republic inside the confines of the existing occupied country. And he was filled with new confidence in his cause and disdain toward the federal government. And simultaneously connected America's extreme right to freedom movements in Syria, Libya, Iran, and Palestine. In fact, he said Yasser Arafat was a particularly admirable character. Well, he was largely regarded as one of the most important personalities in American radicalism during the first half of the 1990s. He gradually fell out of favor with the movement's extremists because he prioritized purging the country of the sins of the federal government above the anti-Semitism. And he was also heard making anti-Nazi remarks, which was definitely a no-no as far as the extreme right's concerned. Well, Beam indicated in October 1996 that it had been 10 years since his arrest, trial, and eventual release at Fort Smith. He'd given the cause 10 years after that, and now he planned to devote his rest of his life to his family. Furthermore, he confessed for the first time he'd been exposed to Agent Orange while serving in Vietnam, and his health was deteriorating. So after that, he concentrated his energies exclusively on his website, still trying his best to get an uprising. Well, if you talk to any of the extreme right, you always hear them use the term Big Brother. And according to conspiracy theorists, the warning is not a literary illusion. Big Brother is certainly monitoring us. Now, for those who've read a lot, the classic novel 1984 depicts a bleak future in which a totalitarian government known as the Party maintains full control over its citizens at all times. And many people considered George Orwell's work to be an almost perfect prophetic vision of an extremely grim and terrible future, one that seems to be actually unfolding right in front of our eyes in the 21st century. We can now rule and monitor all people via brainwashing tactics, media, including television, movies, computerized gadgets that emit propaganda, tracking and espionage systems that follow our every move, and even capacity to see and hear through walls. When Orwell wrote his book, most of these things didn't exist in 1949. In his book, Big Brother, the supreme leader of the party, has become associated with a totalitarian society in which businesses and the government take away our freedom, privacy, and capacity to think for ourselves. They govern over us with unlimited power and control. The party's motto is Big Brother is Watching You, and it's constantly aired in by and through all media. There's nowhere to hide since banners and posters and movies and television displays, laptops, stamps, they're everywhere. Coins, even idea transmission, all communicate Big Brother's proclamation of full dominance. By extension, the terms Big Brother and Big Brother's Watching have become ubiquitous in referring to any conspiracies engaged in bringing about a one world government. You know, there's so many situations such as this that even without the Big Brother facade discussed by George Orwell, we have a lot of the same things going on. Alrighty, we have been talking about conspiracies. You know, one of the biggest proponents of conspiracy theories was a lady by the name of Mae Brussel. Now, you may not have heard of her, but at one point in time, she dominated the airwaves. She began with years of in-depth investigation, persuaded Mae Brussel that the Kennedy murder, the CIA, and Nazi Germany were part of a global network of secret organizations. She became renowned to her many followers as the radio queen after 17 years of feisty and fiery radio broadcast. And she was one of those that hammered on the concept that a shadow government covertly governs the U.S. Now, she began life as Mae Magnan, born in Beverly Hills in 1922, daughter of famous Wiltshire Boulevard Temple Rabbi Edgar Magnan and great-granddaughter of Isaac Magnan, founder of I. Magnan Department Stores. Married with five children, lived in Southern California in 1963. Grew persuaded Lee Harvey Oswald could not have carried out the John F. Kennedy assassination. In fact, there's evidence he never fired a shot. As a result of her involvement in killing John F. Kennedy as a lone wolf, her interest shifted from being a housewife and mother to searching for clues to the Kennedy and Oswald killings, and she became what you might know as a conspiracy theorist. She bought the 26-volume Warren Commission report on the murders and started reading and filing and cross-referencing material from a broad range of books and journals and official records. And after years of detailed investigation, she determined the Kennedy assassination showed linkages to a CIA, Nazi Germany, and a wide range of modern historical organizations and events around the globe. Seemed to her the international network of secret organization conspiracies that had formed and purportedly defeated the Axis forces during World War II had simply gone underground and very successfully continued their mission to dominate governments worldwide. She recognized many of the same names and deceptive strategies to convert Germany from a sophisticated and scientific country in the 20s and 30s into a savage, cruel machine of bigotry and hate in document after document. She was asked to speak as a guest on KLRB, a local FM radio station, in June of 71. Now, she had been researching at that point about 7 years. She was given her chance to express her opinions on political killings. And the reaction from the crowd was so positive, she soon had her own show. At that point in time, we're going to stop because we're running out of time for tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow and finish talking about Mae Brussel and who else? Who knows what else may come up. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.